The MHI Industry Leadership Podcast brings together the solutions, providers, and thought leaders of the materials handling industry to talk about trends, technologies, solutions, and best practices to move the industry forward. Christian Dow is the Executive Vice President of Membership and Industry Leadership at MHI. In each episode, Christian will be talking to the leaders and members of MHI's industry groups. Let's join him now.
Hey, Frank, how's it going?
Top shelf. We'll go with top shelf today. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Top shelf. A supply chain.
I mean,
because it eventually needs to get to the top shelf,
right? Ah, I see. I unintentionally made a funny.
Did you, or did I just save it?
I probably that.
What are we talking about today?
Well, I'm going to be very transparent with you, Christian. I have no freaking idea. I read the title and I was like, well, that sounds like something I'm going to have explained to me. So it says that it's scalable conditioning monitoring. I can't even read it. Scalable condition monitoring and predictive maintenance powered by cloud connected IO link technology.
You know what? You're going to laugh, Frank, but I actually have a pretty long history working with IO link.
Really?
And I'm not even kidding.
I don't even know what that is. So well,
we're going to find out.
That sounds good.
Will understand it by the end of this podcast.
That's a pretty heavy lift, but I trust you.
Not understand it.
Maybe I'll get closer. Maybe I'll get closer.
Who do we have today?
I was going to say, we have a couple of pretty smart guys, hopefully to explain it a little better to me. So that'll be good. We've got the, as I like to introduce him, as though I've done it before, right? The Jerry Pacey. He's a material handling market manager for North America for a company that I will let him tell you the name of, because I'm not going to.
And we have Fuchs. Yeah,
that's
Pepperlin,
right.
Fuchs. Yeah.
Okay, if you say so. Yeah. And also Dan Bruski, market product manager for SICK. And I will let him tell his joke because I thought it was really funny.
You want to start with Dan then? Okay, we'll start with Dan. Dan, introduce yourself. Tell us your joke.
All right. Oh, man, my joke. Well, so I am Dan Bruski. I've been working at SICK, and it's a German company. So the name is SICK, which is interesting too. This isn't the joke, but my wife is a nurse. So she thought that was really funny when I started working for SICK, and she's a nurse 21 years ago. I've done a bunch of different product management type things within the company. And currently I'm working on our condition monitoring solutions, which, and along with a few other things, which is why I'm here. And we definitely, as a way of kicking it off back to Jerry here for introduction, is we know certainly Pepperlin Fuchs very well. Way back in the days, like I said, been here for 21 years. I was hoping maybe we would have looked at that company and seen how good Pepperlin Fuchs was in a lot of areas, and we would have purchased them just for the name so that we could be SICK Fuchs.
Hey.
But apparently that did not happen. So, oh, that's awkward. Oh, there we go.
Oh, that was really, I thought that was your own joke.
Yeah,
that was good.
Yeah. I do. Yeah.
So Jerry, tell us a little bit about yourself, and also you might throw in there a little bit about the solutions community condition monitoring committee.
Yeah. So I'm Jerry Pacey, material handling market manager for Pepperlin Fuchs, or maybe if it's easier for some PNF, that's okay to say too.
Yeah. We'll go with that.
But Christian, you nailed it. Nonetheless, so yeah, I've been with PNF a little over 8 years. I started actually in the engineering side, tech support, and then moved into product management, similar to maybe the role that Dan in, which is an awesome role. And then in the last couple of years, I moved into market management for material handling. So with that, to describe PNF, I look at it as pioneer and innovator in automation technology, to put it simply. So obviously we specialize in sensor technology, similar to like what Dan was describing, ranging from complex technology like LiDAR, cameras, ultrasonic, RFID, stuff like that, to more commodity things, sensors, communication, like the PROC sensor, switches, gateways, IO-Link stuff that we'll maybe go into today, Frank. And I say pioneer because, in fact, we've been around for like 77 plus years, and we invented the PROC switch, so that's pretty cool. And a few of the key markets we focus on, like I do, for material handling, which is a lot of what we'll talk about today in that market. So you know, with condition monitoring and predictive maintenance and all those things. So that's the gist.
So Frank, have you figured it out yet?
We've been doing this for 6 minutes. Give me a minute.
No, I got another question. Have you figured out who on this call worked for NASA?
Oh, well, by the fact that he's laughing, it must be Jerry.
Yeah. That's I'm a victim of that one. Yeah. So that was before I came to PNF. I was there for a little under a year. And let's just say I didn't fit. And that's a funny part of me. I don't think most people would meet me and after talking to me for a while, peg me as a guy who worked there. But I did have a short stint there. So, yeah. But I'm in a better place now, we'll say.
You didn't like the moon, huh? They sent you up and you were like, eh. And
so I'm afraid of heights.
Oh.
That was the deal breaker, you know? I thought I could maneuver out of that one, but that was non-negotiable. So, yeah.
So as we're navigating the alphabet soup and all of the buzzwords and terms, in fact, Frank, I need to get you. We have a list that we give to new hires at MHI to help them understand all the acronyms that are thrown around and terms that are thrown around MHI. So I probably ought to get you that at some point.
No way.
Or we'll just keep it this way and you just don't know.
All you will do is put me to sleep. It won't matter.
That's right. But let's talk about predictive maintenance, Jerry. Tell us a little bit about kind of your thoughts on why is predictive maintenance becoming important? And, you know, is there a misunderstanding of what truly predictive maintenance is and what people think it is versus kind of reality?
Yeah, it's a good question. And you kind of touched on those buzzwords. And Frank, I'm right with you. We have so many, you know, ASRS, AGV, all these things. And people are like, what does that mean? And people like us maybe that are so heavily involved, it's easy. But to break it down, you know, for predictive maintenance, it's the way I like to look at it is like, you guys can't see me because this is, you know, audio, but I'm holding in my hand a smartphone, an iPhone, and an Apple Watch, right? In my opinion, these are two technologies that allow you to reach it that a simple person involved in tech or not probably possesses. And the way you do that is think of it like if you're, you know, trying to understand what's going to happen in the future and you're trying to predict or prevent it. You know, like if you work out or something like that and you go to the gym and you say, well, how, you know, should I work out tomorrow? You do it based on how you feel today, right? And that's a feeling. That's okay, right? I've done that for years. But if you have a smartwatch, you know, and a polar heart rate strap and it's telling you what your recovery is like and you have some data points to pull from so you get a better understanding of how your body is actually performing, not just how you actually feel. Now, that's a more precise, you know, predictor of how maybe you should perform in the future. So if that makes any sense to you, those are tools, right, that we have that allow us to understand what's going to happen in the future. So maybe we can prevent having to do something like maintenance or predict what will happen next. Now, if you take that theory and apply it to automation in the warehouse, it's largely the same in a lot of ways. You know, obviously, you're maybe not using an iPhone and an Apple Watch, using some of the tools that the companies like Dan and I work for produce and manufacture. But it's really that same thing. It's understanding what's going to happen next or, you know, based on the tools that you have in real time and then understanding, you know, the trend analysis and stuff. So hopefully that kind of breaks it down to a more simplistic term.
Yeah. And I guess especially since your machine can't raise its hand and go, I don't feel like working tomorrow. Yeah.
Very true.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Not today. It can't.
Well, fair.
But you're right.
And I am said such simple person, as Jerry put it, because I have an Apple phone and I voted an Apple Watch. Dan, what additional thoughts to kind of the opening on that? What are your thoughts on predictive maintenance?
Well, I think that's great looking at that and a good way of looking at it. It's always good to kind of put it in those different perspectives that we're used to or can see. And it's just trying to get an idea of what might happen. And one of the things I like, too, is your companies that are doing preventative maintenance. So there's preventative and predictive. You know, we're kind of predicting so that we can prevent. I guess, or maybe we have to do maintenance and we can't prevent it, but maybe we can schedule it better. We can be smarter about it, of when's the right time to go to the gym or when should I eat certain things, right? You can't prevent it necessarily. Some of this stuff is going to happen. It's going to wear out. Some of the companies that are doing a very good job of preventative, they're scheduled PMs. They're often based on the best that they can do at the time, which might be time. Okay, every so many cycles or every so many hours or days, we need to go through and do service, fix this, adjust this, replace that. That is really good to be able to do that. But if we can give them some more information, if we can take these sensors, these eyes and ears that are out on these machines, it can help them to know when to do it. But it can also potentially save money in not just the downtime of having a problem, but maybe they don't need to do it yet. How can we predict what it is? And I think sometimes we can look at it that way, of not when I should do something, but maybe when I don't have to. Are you wasting money and time because you're using a basis for repairs and maintenance based on time, not really based on what your machine is doing or what your body is feeling, right? You can get more of that information. If the wear pad, the wear bar, and your brakes aren't squealing, don't replace your brakes. If you have a smarter car, instead of just replacing your oil every 3,000 miles, wait till it says, oh, here's the percentage of oil life you have left, instead of wasting good use of something just to hopefully prevent a problem. You will learn more and you can extend that and schedule it for a better time. And just giving companies and giving users a lot more flexibility for when they plan their preventative maintenance as well, based on information and not just time or number of cycles.
So there was a very specific angle we were going to take in this conversation, and that's IO-Link. Mm-hmm. And so, Dan, what is IO-Link?
IO-Link, one of the best things I think people can do if they don't know what it is or need more, just Google it, look up IO-Link, and that will really help. Or MHI, you guys are going to list some resources and things as well. And there's some really good just tutorials and videos that are just like, what is IO-Link? But it is a sensor level or a smaller level of communication. It's not Ethernet, it's not Profibus, it's not any of those field bus things. It's kind of a sensor to sensor or sensor to gateway. And there's another word. Okay, what's a gateway then? But we'll take an inductive sensor, a proximity sensor that Jerry mentioned. It can give on and off. And you got to wire power, ground, and the signal to each one of those. IO-Link is a universal and standard method for these sensors to communicate not only on and off for something simple like an inductive or a prox sensor, but additional information. What's the temperature on that sensor? How many cycles has it gone on and off? Maybe even information about the proximity field. If it's optical prox, how much light is coming back? Is it getting dirty? If it's a regular, magnetic or inductive prox, what is the field information like? And giving more information and giving this data over the same output wire. So you don't have additional wiring, you don't have any of that stuff, and it's very low cost to add it. So most of the manufacturers for sensors are adding this chip. Low power, low cost into pretty much everything we have. And that's the cool part about IO-Link, is no company really owns it, I guess. There's an oversight group, but all the major sensor manufacturers and PLC manufacturers, they are all conforming. They all agree to conform to a set protocol for communication across these devices. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, when my experience has also been just that there's no royalties on it, which keeps the cost low, right? Because nobody's taking ownership of it and everybody's adopting it. It really makes it something that is able to bring things, data from the points that at a low cost per point that wasn't available prior, right?
And that additional data that it can also carry is what then is connected to this condition monitoring that we're talking about. It's often that additional piece that just adds a lot more weight and value instead of just on and off, which could be good for condition monitoring, but it adds more.
Right.
So just from kind of a model standpoint? Is it kind of like that it's like Linux or one of these things where it's sort of an open sourcey kind of a thing? It's sort of free-ish. Nobody really uses, you know, nobody owns it. And so everybody kind of, it's sort of decentralized. Everybody just uses it. And we've all said, hey, since nobody owns it, let's call that the standard. Is that sort of the idea? Or
yeah, Modbus might be another example or something like that, where it just became kind of the open protocol that is just kind of used. I don't know, Jerry, do you have additional thoughts to that?
Yeah, so I think Dan, he nailed it in that one. For me, it's different in a lot of ways. And the fact, like Dan said, it's more like a consortium that people are involved in. So there's no like, you know, one company that's saying, hey, this is how it is. You guys want to jump on, we do it. It's more so of a conglomeration of minds that are saying, hey, this is the route we want to go past down. And you know, it's formed and we all kind of agree to it. And to add what Dan was saying, it for me, I always look at it like health. So, and again, Dan said this, it provides the data about how the sensor is doing, because like we talked about, Dan and I both, you have a simple sensor and it says, hey, is a piece of metal there or not? Or is, you know, is a box there or not? That's great. That's useful. It's commodity. But to understand the health of what that sensor is doing and how long it will behave that way, like Dan said, the temperature and things like that is critical.
So, and part of the reason I ask the question is because I think this sort of decentralized model to it is pretty critical and pretty important in terms of its integration and being able to use across a lot of different platforms and a lot of different things. I think that's super interesting. So tell me this, is there any, like how deep does the rabbit hole go? Is there anything that it can't, you know, figure out how to do? Like, is there anything that it can't be programmed to do? Or am I oversimplifying it? Am I asking, is that too dumb of a dumb question, Christian? I don't know.
Well, I think what it is that the sensors that used to be just simple on off discrete can now be that, but you used to have a single set point on a sensor, and now right. You can change that set point based on the environment that sensor's in and choose your own right set point based on the environmental reading. So a sensor that was really dumb and on off now has the ability to be smarter without a lot of additional cost.
So it would like make then, me into Jerry. That's what you're like, really dumb and then goes super smart.
The other thing is
he won't even acknowledge that. He just moves on. Go
that's
on.
Right, that's right. But the other part is that a lot of things that were that gave kind of a range of values back, like analog is very susceptible to noise and other things that interfere with it, and is also dependent on a high cost card that's translated later on and things. And now IO-Link kind of simplifies that and lowers the cost of that as well and provides that data back. And you also have things like where you can scale the data that you come back in the sensor. And so it changes a lot of the detail of what you can get out of it. And the what I like about this conversation, we have two different manufacturers here, and neither one of them probably make identical products that go into IO-Link. They probably have whole different portfolios that of what, you know, goes in. And you can source one from SICK and one from PNF and put it on somebody else's you know,
good point.
System, and it doesn't, they will all communicate together. Yeah, so, and I would, Jerry, kind of add to that.
Yeah,
add to that point as well, just to kind of how how everything kind of fits together is kind of like a puzzle.
Absolutely, that's a great point too, because you think of the advantage, like, you know, again, going back to the smartphone thing, maybe because mine is looking at me. You know, you want a text from an iPhone to an Android, and you got the funny color bubbles, right? There's a issue there, right, with the communication. It's on purpose. Yeah,
the issue is somebody needs to get a better phone. That's the issue.
Maybe right. That's part of the debate, right? I'm sure that's maybe part of the debate. But with this, Christian brought up a good point. You don't have that issue, right? So Dan and I, right, we see eye to eye in the fact that if he's got an inductive proc sensor that has IO-Link and PNF does too, they operate and communicate on the same level in the same thing. You know, of course, our companies would prefer one color, but Dan and I know both that they perfectly work fine in the same environment because they share that same thing and it's open to that regard. So that's a very good point, Christian. And it's an advantage to the user.
Yeah, it's definitely the advantage of the user. So that's definitely, you know, those listening to this, that may have heard IO-Link. There's just a lot of really good reasons to look into it. And part of it is because if you go online, you look at the consortium, it's all of your options. It's all of us, we'll call them competitors, I guess, right? Because we're doing the same thing. But that's fine, because we all put that aside and put that down for things like this and for the IO-Link groups. We're coming together. There's IO-Link user groups we were just at and I'm sitting right next to everybody else that's making these, and we're really coming together to enhance automation for our users of this. And so it's definitely something, if you're looking into it, to go ahead and look into it for we're talking about condition monitoring, but one of the best uses for it too, and even the IO-Link group will say, it's cost reduction. It's wiring cost reduction.
Agreed.
It's cost reduction of, if you're wanting data to get like a vibration and temperature and condition monitoring, that would be a very expensive thing to do. And part of it is because of the communication you would need. You do need to have it over analog out, and you need an analog input card, you need to have programmers, or you need to have an Ethernet thing. The IO-Link, through whoever's making the sensors, really now opens the door to be able to do things and put stuff on your machine that you wouldn't have been able to do before. We're using an inductive sensor, or a prox as an example, because it's one of the commodity things. But now, man, it's like, okay, yeah, there goes the flag. There's my homing position. But let's get a little more information we can pull out. So that's all working on a PLC layer. But hey, we can pull out at the same time for free, because the data is already there. It's already sitting waiting for you to use it. How far away is the tag? Okay, it goes by home, I'm counting. But let's take an extra piece of information. And every once in a while, we'll say, how far away is the tag? Oh, I'm starting to lose some signal. I'm still functional, no problem. Well, maybe that means my wheels are wearing out, or bearings going a little bit. Still functional, everything's great. But it just gives you that extra piece that is on top of everything. It doesn't affect how you're operating on a PLC layer. It's just one more set of free information. And so many people have sensors out there that have IO-Link on them. They may not even know it yet, because people like PNF and SICK and everybody else has been putting these chips in forever.
You may
have a critical mass now where you add a IO-Link master from one of the six suppliers that all conform, and you've got yourself a whole nother machine there that you can do some cool stuff with, and some condition monitoring, some trending. That's pretty amazing.
And you don't have to install any new thing or rewire a thing. It's all just there. That's kind of what I was trying to get to when I said, like, how deep does a rabbit hole go? Like, this thing exists, it's in there, the sensor's there, the chip's there, or whatever. And that data you said is just sitting there? So I can just...
It's typically when you're developing a new system. So it's available in new systems, new technologies, okay. Right?
So I wouldn't be able to like go system, back.
The new generation of a machine is going to be a lower cost and easier to implement and have a lot of these things. So it may not have grown with inflation from the previous generation to this generation, because the manufacturer is able to put it together faster, easier, and then it's easier to support long-term. Now there's going to be different like programming code to it, whether it's in the PLC, the local brain for the system, mm-hmm. or the, available on the, in the software that supports it, your warehouse control system, for example. But it's typically going to be available on newer systems where you're starting to implement that way. But if you're looking for something that's a little bit more maintainable, looking for things that has IO-Link and really uncovering the capabilities of the system, there's going to be more capability in those systems.
Interesting. So when we say scalable condition monitoring, help me. What's the scalable part?
I can touch on that, Frank. So when I think of, and I'm just spitballing how I would say it. So it's really the ability to share information, right, from machines and operations throughout the entire enterprise. So it's, it's how you can grow that, right? Because when you first get into this, you think, okay, I have a facility that has this many machines. Let's start on one. And then you scale it up, right, and see how far you can go. And this is ideal for that type of scenario, because it's not siloed data. So it's in the cloud, right? So that's the end game, is you have it in the cloud. And then the intel is published throughout multiple groups, right? That you have a dashboard and you publish that. So that type of path will allow expansion from, like I said, from one machine to 20 without, you know, clear major issues. It's set up to be able to achieve that. You can share the data, right? So you have your unique experience that you're experiencing on one machine, even in one facility, and you can publish that data out. And then where Christian's at, where Dan is at, they can experience that too. And then from there, when you have all that type of data, that's when you have the ability in real time to understand what's going on and the historical data. So then you can do what they, like Dan touched on too, trend analysis to understand long-term. That's when you get into the next step of predicting, you know, what's going on. And then, you know, understanding how to be more efficient, because that's actually what a lot is about. I don't know if we use that term enough yet, is efficiency. I think Dan maybe used it, but that's really a lot about what all of this is about, is being more efficient. So that's kind of the gist of it, Frank.
Yeah. So it's not just collecting data for the fun of it, Dan.
No, I think that's a bit of a misconception too, because I've heard people say that, and I get it, that, you know, what's the point of having all this data? You're right. There is no point of having all the data, but there's a reason why this is the information times is the fact that once you have it, now you have those points to utilize to make your system and facility more efficient.
And that's part of the scalability. I would add a couple of things we've said here is the scalability I like about it is like Jerry said, you start with one. You go, I'm liking what I'm seeing. And then you add a couple more. Let's say you're measuring, you know, condition monitoring on a motor, vibration or heat or whatever it is. And you can try one and the investment level is pretty small. It's a starter kit kind of thing. And then you can add more and more and more. And you don't even have to, like you had alluded to, guys, you don't even have to keep buying it from the same company. Of course, we would certain like to, but it's like, oh, I don't have certain things. Great, go get that somewhere else. If it's got IO-Link, add it on. I don't do, you know, our company doesn't do current measurement. Okay, great, go get that from somebody else. Or humidity sensing if you want to do air quality, whatever it is in your area. And you can add, that's the scalability, is that they just talk to each other. You don't have to say, oh man, I got this type. That won't work with that type, the Apple and Android, you know, bubble thing. That adds the scalability. And the other part I like is the data scalability. And Jerry, you referenced it a lot, there's a lot of data, the IoT, you know, big data, that kind of stuff. And while the machine is operating at its machine level or PLC level, a lot of these IO-Link masters that you can get at the same time can be publishing the IoT data and kind of almost bypass the machine level. You can use it for controlling machine, but you don't have to, but you can publish this stuff up to a cloud, either an on-premise cloud or a real cloud, whatever it is. Now you have the data. And a lot of people are starting by saying, okay, we're going to grab it. We're not sure what to do with it yet, but the data is kind of free. It's there. We're going to grab it and we can start trending. We can start looking at this and saying, you know, I notice when that heat, the temperature on this thing goes up, we start to get more vibration or something over here. And we're seeing customers, real customers right now, picking up on things that they never would have noticed. And it's a little bit of, hey, let's just graph this over 3 weeks. Each machine, we'll look at each machine and we'll notice, oh, this one's doing something different. You never would have caught something or seen that or understood that efficiency. You can maybe be able to understand more about, hey, we slow down when this happens. You may never have put that together if you didn't see that on an overlaid graph with data. So they may not have started by saying, oh, I want to look for that. They could come at it later, but they don't have to. That's the scalability. They can figure that out later. They can look at that 6 weeks from now. They can look at that 6 months from now.
It didn't have to be programmed to do that from the get-go. And then, if we didn't put it in there, sorry, that's just, you know, it doesn't collect that data. Now, so you're saying it's like they could look and go, we slow down at these times of day or these times of week or whatever it is. And then they could just pull out what are other things that are happening at those times and then lay them on. This is some heavy duty nerd stuff, Christian.
It is.
Yeah,
it is. And you know what? We've touched on kind of the obviously the proc sensor. And I think Dan threw out some things like vibration and temperature and things like that. But Jerry, what other types of sensors does this really apply to? I mean, is it it's almost,
man, anything, it's interesting. Right? Yeah. Yeah. So like Dan kind of touched on, everyone, including our respective companies, are putting in everything. So, like I said, it's from simplistic sensors, I think would be the bulk of what you'll see as far as technology goes. So proc sensors, right? Inductive, photoelectric, ultrasonic, things like that. But we're seeing it from both our respective companies and others that is going into more complex things. So even position sensors where you want to have that. And the whole idea of it is not so much what information do you get out of the sensor. It's more so understanding the health of the sensor, right? So that's a big portion of it as well. It's not just of what you can get out of it, because if you have a camera, you know, a 3D point cloud, that's a lot for maybe IO-Link to handle, right? Does that make sense? That's a conversation. But to understand how long that camera's been running on your line that's critical in your facility, that I don't think is up for debate. We all care about that long term. So as far as the breadth of technologies, it's quite wide, simply for that fact. It's not just what the sensor is providing you, but it's the health of the sensor as well. So I don't see it stopping anytime soon. That's been my experience so far.
Dan, so tell us more about, you kind of lit up when I asked the question of what kind of sensors are there. Could it be anything? So yep. Continue.
And can you 3D print them on that machine behind you? No, go ahead.
You know what? I haven't seen an IO-Link 3D printer, but in fact, that would be something that would be a good thing to do. I think it's just maybe too, at least a home version of a 3D printer, but this is exactly what could that definitely be is now on my phone. I could have this published. So the IO-Link sensors on there would be telling me about movement. Is it running? I could have something looking to see if it's just turned into a big spaghetti mess, and I'll get a message on my phone that says, hey, there's something wrong, you know, and you could power down. They do have that stuff now, but it's not over IO-Link, but it's the we've been talking about, sensor manufacturers been talking about IO-Link for a long, long time. And we would say we've been pushing the rope, but I think it's really pushing a cable, maybe in this case. It's fun now because we're at a critical mass and an exponential growth of sensor companies, or any, like, it's not just sensors. There's a bunch of other stuff. I just know sensors, but a bunch of other products that have IO-Link in them now. The number of nodes of IO-Link is exploding. And there's just so many different sensors that you can put on, pressure sensors and temperature and just anything you can measure, ultrasonic sensors, just everything that you can put it on and be able to have these things talk to each other. And just like I said, it's not very exciting, but just wire, it's just cutting the cost of just cabling and wiring alone allows users to put this on conveyors and vehicles and things to check in on what's going on. And they could, that they couldn't have maybe afforded to do before. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, it also, there was limitations a lot of times in the past too, where to add analog to something, you had to buy a card that had multiple analogs, you had 2, 4, 8, 6, whatever number that was. And you could only put so many of those cards on there. Yep. And then the sensors were more expensive, right? And so it became a limitation of how many analog points could even put on that system before you had to add another system. And it seems like those numbers have gone either just so big that they're not even relative anymore, and then the costs have come down so much that they're not really even, nearly the factor they were.
Yeah, it really enables people to think about what would you like to have done, and now you can. It'd be great if we put something on every one of, on an ASRS or on a shuttle. I'd love to put something on every one of these, but you can't afford it. Like, what's the distance on both corners of the box before you go in and pick it up? Not only the cost of those things you mentioned, but again, cables. You would have to, with the analog stuff and the noise around there, you'd have to have shielded cables. IO-Link, you don't need shielding. It's you don't need that on there. So now you're buying much lower cost commodity items now on here, which just opens up so much.
And I feel like I may have told an untruth to Frank before, Like, I may have lied to you.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time.
and I said that, Frank, these are going to be on newer systems, but I think that's kind of untrue, because you can add IO-Link to pretty much any one of those networks that yep. are made by the manufacturers that have a a proprietary nature to those networks. You can add IO-Link
yep.
to those, and then add in your sensing for your condition monitoring, right? You can add these things after the fact. So, and it becomes a lower cost than to go and modify maybe the original system and go with the more traditional route of just adding more of these things to that system.
Dan, 100%.
Am I close? Yep. Yeah. So,
yeah.
So you can add a condition monitoring program to your machine at a much lower cost than you would have done in an older machine otherwise.
So I'm going to ask what may be, again, a question that like everyone's going to be like, hey, everybody knows the answer to that. I don't. And not to poo-poo on it, because it sounds like, you know, IO-Link is like the great white hope of, you know, the future, you know, or whatever. But like, this is a lot of data. Where does this data go? What happens? Is it secure? How, can people hack in now? And is the robot army coming? You know, that's always my real question, isn't it, Christian? That's always what I really want to know, is when does the robot army come?
Yeah, Jerry, why don't you take us down the security pathway, whether or not this data is secure? What happens?
Yeah, I think you can't have these type of conversations without bringing up that, right? It makes sense. It's warranted. Often, I think Dan and I have talked about this before in the past too, that's often one of the stops that people have, and with good reason, right? Because you're talking about taking some, which is critical data, to a facility or enterprise and putting it in a cloud, and they feel like they've lost control. Well, there's a lot of, for one, like I said, it's warranted. But the way that I look at it is a couple. So the latest technology from like AWS, Azure, and stuff like that, they're adopting the latest technology, right, in security. So private and public encryption keys are some to name a few, TLS that's used specifically with MQTT that Dan and I's companies use. It allows secure data in the cloud with a certificate. So in some ways, the data that one facility uses as well is not so easy to interpret. That's another thing. But in addition, we got to think about it, that this isn't necessarily so new. The idea of technology and data being in the cloud, right? I mean, I remember when I watched a keynote from Apple, I don't know how many years ago, but it was several before I was in the sensor world, and Apple had iCloud, right? So I'm not saying it's a small thing, and I'm not saying there shouldn't be antennas up, but nonetheless.
Well, I mean, like data. Cloud, you know, pictures of my, you know, my kid and their dog is a little different than my, you know, critical competitive data, right? So
it is. And agreed, I can understand where the concern is, but nonetheless, the data is managed in a similar fashion. It's not new, right? So it's not like this new thing of like, how does this cloud stuff work? We're all familiar with it. On everybody's iPhone, they have either your photos and all of your backups being backed up in the cloud, and it happens without you really knowing about it. And maybe some of that bank information that you have is kind of critical in there, right? And then also in addition, all the stuff that you have for your enterprise will be in that similar fashion, and it's happening in the background. But nonetheless, I'm not trying to downplay its importance, but I'm just trying to shed light that it's not necessarily a new world for the tech industry to be able to manage. And then, of course, you know, you have what we call on-prem. So like some of that data doesn't have to leave your premises, right? That's what we call about on-prem. And, you know, maybe there's some disadvantage to that. That's a debate. But nonetheless, there's the advantage of the security is minimized in that regard comparatively. And then furthermore, you can have a hybrid systems. Those do exist as well. So you have some that's on-prem, some that goes to the cloud, and you can manage that. So what I mean to say is that it's not particularly new to be able to manage, you know, critical data in the cloud overall. And it definitely is a warranted conversation to have.
Well, Dan, I'm going to make a statement, and you can tell me I'm crazy or, you know, don't know what I'm talking about.
Just say it's crazy.
Feel free to go any direction you want to go with this. But IO-Link doesn't really apply to the cloud, because IO-Link is really bringing everything up to either a device or a controller that then becomes networked after IO-Link. So the IO-Link discussion is, how do I get the data to a point where then I can decide to move that data to an on-prem or a cloud, you know, where I can then manage it, analyze it, things like that, right? Am I right, Dan, or am I way off?
Yep. I'm not a network guy, but I 100% agree that IO-Link is not a cloud. IO-Link isn't the data going out anywhere. IO-Link is on-premise. You know, it goes to a IO-Link master. That's pretty much, I think they all need to do that. And then from there, that is often a gateway to something. It could be Profibus, Ethernet, TCP, EtherCAT, whatever it would be. And possibly then to cloud. Whether, and I'll use that, I'll go ahead and do the air quotes, but I'm not even going to. I'll tell you I'm doing air quotes, cloud. As Jerry said, it could be an on-premise cloud. So a cloud is just somebody else's computer. I mean, there's a cloud. But so your own computer, like at my company, the stuff we're doing in our production facility, it looks like it's on the cloud. But it's just a computer sitting in somebody's office right now. But now when I'm on the VPN, I can go see it just like if it was on Amazon, AWS, Azure, anything like that. So, but now we chose, nope, we want to keep it. We want it behind our VPN. But that is not IO-Link. That is now that IO-Link data has been collected. And it's packaged up and it's sitting there ready to go. And do you want to serve it up over MQTT? That's one way. REST API is another way. Where do you want it to go? That is different. That's a good discussion. Jerry said it's warranted. You need to understand what you guys are comfortable with doing. You could put a SIM card in a gateway and have it just go mobile. Type of a thing. A lot of really good options, but those are kind of separate from what's going on the sensors. It's just, what do you want to do with this data? And for people that are scared of it in a way, and that's and rightfully so to be concerned, just find what fits for your company, your end users, wherever they are. What do they like? Do they like to keep it all inside, or would they prefer to use contracted professionals that are doing data security? And like Jerry said too, is this IO-Link data, it's not enterprise sales information. There's no cost information. We're not hooked into your SAP systems. The worst that would happen is that your competitor finds out that you have some motor somewhere with a weird name on it on some facility and it heated up. Or maybe a bolt got a little bit loose and now it's jiggling. Ooh.
Right. So look, okay, don't underestimate the no, I'm just kidding.
Because you can't kidding. Write typically for at least our sensors that we've been talking about, it's information. We're not you really? Can change some settings. So I guess if some malicious person wanted to try to reset a set it's a different scale. We're not talking about hooking up into your back end systems and giving competitive information.
In terms of risk, this is pretty low, it sounds like. I mean, and it sounds like you actually have a lot more control over where this goes and what goes where and all that kind of stuff than maybe it's not just magically shot out into the ether that anyone can go and grab.
Gary mentioned the hybrid thing. Keep it all local. And then for stuff that you want other people in other facilities, that's that scalability. It's not just one machine or two machines. It's a facility. It's not now a facility. Now it's your corporation. And now it's whatever. You just put up the information you want. You don't have to put up everything. You just filter stuff out and you go, hey, yeah, here's how many hours we've been operating, you know, or uptime or downtime or throughput, whatever. And you just host whatever you want and whatever secure method you feel like hosting.
Yeah, adding IO-Link doesn't change the vulnerabilities of your system. You still have to have the same protections in place on the overall system or the piece of equipment or your facility or whatever it is. IO-Link sits below that and doesn't add to those vulnerabilities. It will provide more insight, more data, more things that if you do become vulnerable, people will be able to have more visibility to what's happening. But as you said, Dan, it's a pretty low level risk.
Yeah.
So. And if I could add something to that too, Christian, just to summarize your point, like we're talking a lot about the cloud. We're talking about a lot about IO-Link. There is a large amount of people in my experience, maybe Dan agrees, that use IO-Link that don't even understand the cloud or have nothing to do with it. They are not 100% linked. So I don't want anyone to think like, okay, so I got to have the cloud because I'm using IO-Link. That's not true. These are options, right? And just like you said, Christian, IO-Link is at the base level, giving you the data that you can use once you make the decision or not to use the cloud. But it's not a requirement that if you use IO-Link that you have to store your data in the cloud and make all these large scale decisions on security and such. That's not the case. It's an option.
Thank you for saying that, because I would say that's almost everybody. I think we get excited because of where it could go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most users right now, it's all just localized and it's a few bits.
Agreed.
On off, if it goes by, and maybe a temperature warning, if that, and it all just stays right on the PLC. This is a new gateway door opening thing you could do.
Yes.
But in fact, we're trying to talk, we're trying to be out there and being Jerry and I apostles or you know, disciples of this, standing, you know, and going, hey, here's what you can do now. But
that's
right. Well, definitely, and don't be scared off. We're dreaming here. We're talking about what the could be's, but at the same time, it could be now. We're not talking, the stuff we're talking about isn't what is going to be invented or where we could go. This isn't flying cars. This is right now. You could get going with this stuff now. But yeah, most people aren't right now. It's just very local, very localized use.
This is a great example of why I love having the technology providers, the solutions, the sensor and the OEMs, the devices and things, be involved in MHI and the solutions community, because you guys are bringing technology to the market that is unrealized until you tell people what the capability is. And then 5, 6, 7 years, however long it takes for the adoption to truly happen, then it finally gets into the equipment and into the world where it's actually being realized on factory and plant floors and warehouses and distribution centers. It's pretty cool.
Yep.
Jerry, why don't you tell us a little bit about where you can find more resources on the solutions community?
Yeah. So actually, a lot of the stuff that I've learned today comes from me being involved in that industry group and the solution community. So you can go to mhi.org/solutions-community, and you'll see a ton of information, articles, presentations, all of that stuff. A lot of the stuff that Dan and I are talking about is published there. And then, of course, Christian, I like the Warehouse Automation blog. That's another one which you can access from that same page. I believe also on LinkedIn, that's another one where a lot of this information gets posted as well. Because that's the next thing is, right, you say, hey, how do I start this? And Dan touched on this too. It's Googling some of these things, understanding some of these things, but using a source that you know is coming from different people. It's not just Pepler Fuchs and saying, hey, this is how you should do it. Mm-hmm. But then Sick is saying the same thing with Dan. And you're like, well, maybe these guys are telling the truth. And a lot of that stuff is published through the solutions community, which, you know, makes it a little bit more credible.
Excellent point. You know, the thing with the MHI industry groups is a lot of times it's competitors collaborating like we are doing right now.
Exactly.
And you know, you can trust the information because it's not coming from a single source, and there's no reason for two people to collaborate if it's not true.
That's right.
Right.
We're not getting paid. We're not getting paid for this. Right. So, it's, right. Yeah.
So Frank, did you learn anything today? Did you learn anything about IO-Link?
I'll tell you what. For all of my large warehouses, Christian, I'm sold. We're going IO-Link all the way, all the way. No, but in all seriousness, this is yet again, and I know I say it a lot, but like getting down into like just the really gritty details of the data, I find it fascinating that people do this because it's so like not on my radar, like my personal, like I would never even think of this stuff, but the level of efficiency and monitoring and things that is possible. I just think it's super, super interesting. And I also think that, you know, we go, well, does it really matter that this nut is getting loose and this, you know, who knows, maybe we're going to collect data that doesn't totally matter right now. But what I find super cool about this is what's being laid as a groundwork, you know, especially with this collaborative nature of it. Cause I personally, I think as we look at data and all that kind of stuff, that's where all, whether it's this industry or any industry, that's where all this stuff is going. We're going to have to be more collaborative and more community oriented in order to really solve some of the big problems that I think we're going to face, you know, in the coming years. And so this is, I think, kind of a cool, ground laying for what that to come. So it was a good episode. I will say, definitely in my top 400 of episodes.
Well, I'll take that.
We're at about episode 30. So
He's predicting the future.
See, my IO link said that I no. Okay.
Awesome. Jerry, thank you for joining us. Dan, thank you for joining us. Frank, as always. And if you want to learn more about the MHI Industry Leadership Podcast, please subscribe and follow our podcast, and we'll have more episodes for you in the future.
Thank you for joining the MHI Industry Leadership Podcast. Join us next time to learn more about the trends, technologies, solutions, and best practices that are moving the industry forward.